Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, my goodness. Y'all are spry this morning. I don't even have to say it the second time. How's everybody?
I'm fine, thank you.
Cold, yeah, me too. Ooh, I don't like it. A word of prayer, do some housekeeping, we'll read some Bible, and then we'll leave. Sound good? That's the agenda for today. The Lord be with you. Let us pray. Blessed Lord, who has caused all scriptures to be written for our instruction. Teach us so to hear them, to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest them, so that we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life that you have given to us through our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom with you and the Holy Spirit be all honor and glory, world without end.
Amen.
Housekeeping things. We're not going to meet for a few weeks, so don't come back to this room. You can come back next Sunday. It's kind of an important day, but I mean, it's like a major holiday, so you don't really have to show up at church. But anyway, we're not meeting here. Something else will be happening at 10 o'clock. Celebration of our redemption, maybe. Maybe the fact that God has come among us, maybe. Yeah, so maybe other important things might be happening besides Roy Heller's class. So there's that, and then we're not meeting, I don't know, you'll hear when we're meeting next time. I don't know what the schedule is for this week. We are meeting in the spring, I think, but I don't know when, and you'll hear, and just ask, and you shall receive. Knock, and you shall be asked. Any other housekeeping things? Anybody know who I am?
Yes.
Okay, good. I can't think of anything else. Today we sort of finish things up in an important type of way. Again, we've been going through Exodus, Israel in slavery, God sends plagues, God sends 9 plagues, and then God sends a 10th plague, the death of the firstborn, which finally convinces Pharaoh, well, a while, to let the people go. The people, Israel, the Israelites, Hebrews, escape Egypt. They come to the Red Sea. Pharaoh wakes up and says, oh my God, what have we done? He gets all of his army to go out to chase them. Something happens there at the Red Sea. I'm not quite sure what, but something happened. If you were there, it's online. You can listen to it. Something happens there at the Red Sea. I'm not quite sure what, but whatever happens during that episode, at the end of it, there's no more Egypt. There's no more Egyptian army. There's no more Pharaoh. This is the difference with the Ten Commandments, you know, the movie, is that Yul Brynner goes back and he's all, no, in the real story, Pharaoh, everybody dies. So that's kind of important, actually. But at the end of that story, there's no more Egyptians. There's no more Egypt. And Israel is headed into the wilderness. So that's how that story ends, whatever that story is. What we've seen last week is that we have a series of stories. There's the story of the rescue at the sea from the Egyptians. So the rescue from the Egyptians is a story about God giving them water. There's a story about God giving them food. There's a story about God giving them water. And there's a story about God rescuing them from the Amalekites who want to kill them, right? So there's rescue, water, food, water, rescue. It's kind of cool, isn't it? It might make you think that there's actually somebody behind this putting these stories together. There actually might be method in the madness. And as we saw, a point that I didn't make last time is that with the rescue of the sea, they complain, oh, why don't you bring us out here to die? Right? And God rescues them. They go 3 days in the desert without water. Why don't you bring us out here without anything to drink? And God gives them water. Why don't you bring us out here without anything to eat? God gives them food. And then they're journeying. Why don't you bring us out here and not anything to drink? God gives them water. Oh my God, why are we being threatened by the Amalekites? And God rescues them. The important thing in these Exodus stories, because I can tell you, we're going to see wilderness stories again when we get to Numbers. in 2039. But whenever we get to numbers, there's going to be very similar types of stories. God's going to rescue them from people that want to kill them. There's going to be water stories, and there's going to be food stories. I'm consistently over there.
In numbers, the way it works is that God gives them water, God gives them food, God gives them all of these things, and they complain about what they're getting. And God gets mad. And bad things happen.
Here, it's really, really important that there they are at the Red Sea, and they complain, and they say, why'd you bring us out here to kill us with the Egyptians? God doesn't get mad. God rescues them. They go 3 days in the wilderness, in the desert, and they say, we don't have any water to drink. And God doesn't get mad. God gives them water. They go for a while. They don't have anything to eat. Remember, they left in the night. The only thing they had is, like, crackers or something, right? We don't have anything to eat. God doesn't get mad. God gives them food. God gives them manna. We don't have anything to drink. God doesn't get mad. God tells Moses to hit the rock and there's water that comes out. Oh my God, we're going to be killed by the Amalekites. God doesn't get mad. God rescues them from the Amalekites. It's really important that in these wilderness stories, there's no anger. God takes care of them. And we're going to see an evidence of that again today. So we've gone through the wilderness and God takes care of all of their needs. One more thing, and that is, how many people were last week? Just went, oh, wonderful. If you remember last week, one of the things that we did in that story is to take a look at that first water story and how you can interpret quite literally, quite practically. That story is, in fact, two different stories depending on how you organize it. That story means two different things. That story either means, it's a great lecture, you should listen to it online. I should get paid for every time, not always, never mind. Not only is that story, and it really is, it's a story about how God takes care of God's people by giving them water when they're thirsty. It's a beautiful story. And simultaneously, it is also a story, not about God taking care of the people, but about the people's responsibility to do what God says. It says right there that God tests them. And God says to them, if you will listen to my voice, and if you will do what I say, you're going to be a special, you're going to be a special possession for me. Right? So the story is not only about God's provision, it's also about the people's responsibility, which is going to have an implication for the next three books of the Bible. So it's kind of important. And that's sort of where we are. We left off at the end of chapter 17. And you see today, we begin at the beginning of chapter 19. Unlike certain buildings where there's no 13th floor, there actually is a chapter 18, and I don't want to deal with it. In 30 seconds or less, this is what happens there. Moses' father-in-law comes to meet him in the wilderness, in the desert, brings his wife and his two kids. Moses' wife and two kids with him. They meet there. Moses is sort of sitting around all day, and people are complaining to him about things that are happening, and he's having to deal with legal matters all day long. And Jethro, the father-in-law, says, oh my God, you're just wearing yourself out. You should appoint other people to do like the minor courts. You should appoint minor courts to deal with day-to-day matters. And if anything's too hard, bring it to the Supreme Court, which is Moses. That's about 30 seconds. So anyway, that's what happens at 18, and I don't want to deal with it, because I really want to concentrate on 19. And if we have any time left over after my babbling, we'll see if you have anything to say. That didn't come out. Let's see what we got. Arriving at Sinai, yeah. Here's the whole point. Oh, here's just one more thing before we begin this, because this is kind of setting this up. During the 1960s, and in fact, almost throughout the history of Christianity, one of the ways in which the Exodus has been interpreted, that is, people that are in bondage in Egypt, leaving that. So far, so good, the Exodus. One of the ways that that's interpreted is that it is a story of people who are in slavery that are freed. Right? It's a very common way of interpreting it. It's not the way it should be interpreted. at least according to the Bible. This is, in fact, not a story. That is the story of the Exodus. It's, in fact, not a story. And again, I don't want to, like, step on any toes, but it really isn't. It's not a story of people who are in bondage that are free. It's not a story of a bunch of people who are serving Pharaoh that don't have to do that anymore. It's a story. It is, in fact, a story. And it's very clear from the water story last week. It is a story instead of a bunch of people who are serving Pharaoh and get rescued in that from that in order to serve God. They don't leave Egypt. The good news is not that they leave Egypt and get to do whatever the hell they want now. No. The good news is, in fact, that they were once servants of Pharaoh, and now they get to be servants of God. Because I can tell you, brothers and sisters, and again, this is going from teaching to preaching, and probably from preaching to meddling. I don't care who you are, you're going to serve someone. It's part of being human. It's part of being a finite being. You never, ever, I don't care who you are, you don't get to do whatever you want. You're going to be serving someone, or you're going to be serving something. The question is it going to be Pharaoh? Whether it's going to be pain and oppression and degradation? Or is it going to be God, whose service is in fact freedom? But you really do have to do what he says. So, sound good?
Yep.
Cool. Here we go. On the third new moon, so 3 months. On the third new moon after the Israelites had gone out of the land of Egypt, on that very day, they came into the wilderness of Sinai. So it's taken 3 months to go through the wilderness. They come to the wilderness of Sinai. They had journeyed from Rephidim, which is way back there in chapter 14, where they're at the Red Sea. So they leave Egypt, they camped at Rephidim right there. So they had journeyed from Rephidim, entered the wilderness of Sinai, they camped in the wilderness, and then finally Israel camped there in front of the mountain. So it's the picture there in that little paragraph is sort of a line from Egypt to Rephidim to the wilderness to Sinai. So now we're at Sinai. One of the things that's going to happen here, we've talked about this before, so it shouldn't be a real surprise to you, is that we're going to have different voices, different traditions in the story that's going to come in here. And unlike anybody here for the Red Sea crossing class, where we actually had that quadraphonic, we actually heard separate stories. Here, it's not so clear, but it's not so clear where we're sort of switching from one to another. But one of the things that's going to be true with this story, and again, just sort of setting it up because I think it's rather hilarious, is because the story is going to be set up about how Moses is a mediator between God and the people, which is really important. But what's going to happen here, because there are different voices, what's going to happen is that there's basically an escalator of Sinai. And so he's going to be going up and down, and up and down, and up and down, and up and down. He's going to go up and down, and up and down. In fact, there's one point that's coming up that God says, come up! And so he comes up and he says, go down! So anyway, just be aware of that. And it's just part of the nature. So it's just part of the nature of this multi-tradition thing here. So anyway. So Moses went up to God. And the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, you tell the Israelites, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and also how I bore you on eagle's wings, and I brought you to myself, and he will raise you up on eagle's wings. Again, it's a nice image, but what the image actually means here in the midst of the story is, in fact, they're trekked through the wilderness, they're trekked through Death Valley. They've actually been staying in motels all the way through, right? With mini bars in the rooms, right? It's actually, again, all they have to do is just ask for water, and they get water. Again, it's not been particularly difficult. The trip has happened. God has brought them out of Egypt on Lufthansa, right? So again, I bore you up, right? Again, I'm the one that's carried you here. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and I brought you to myself. This is so, so, so important. That sentence is actually so important in this story, because you see, from the very beginning of the book of Exodus, in fact, from the very beginning of the book of Genesis, but the people already have a relationship with God. God already loves them. They didn't have to do a darn thing to get rescued from Pharaoh's power. They already have a relationship with God. And because they already have a relationship with God, then there's going to be certain responsibilities. And those responsibilities are going to be spelled out through the law. The law is not... sentence right there. The law is not set up as something that we have to fulfill in order to have a relationship with God. If we break the law, it doesn't break our relationship with God. Again, this is so important. The law is simply spelling out what that relationship looks like. We already have a relationship with God here at the very beginning of coming to Sinai. And because of that, we're going to have three more books of what that relationship looks like. So, I have borne you on eagle's wings, and I have brought you to myself, because I love you. Now, therefore, see, there it is. Because of that, if you obey my voice, and if you keep my covenant, you'll be my treasured possession out of all the peoples. In fact, the whole earth is mine, but you're going to be for me a priestly kingdom, a holy nation. You see what he's just done there? He's taken two totally different things. Two totally different things. Things having to do with priests, things having to do with holiness, things having to do with worship God, things having to do with, sacrifice, things having to do with all of that type of liturgy, things having to do with, you know, you're good Episcopalians, right? All that type of stuff. And then all of this secular stuff. When the recycling goes out, right? How much you pay for the water, right? How you blah, 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 blah. You know, who's fixing the street? All of this type of governmental stuff. And he's taken these two things and he's combined them. If you will listen to my voice and if you obey my words, then this is what you're going to be. You're going to be a something special to me. I already love you, but you're going to be something special. And the specialness that you are going to manifest is that you're going to take this concept of holiness, and you're going to take this concept of secularity, and we're going to bring those things together in a way that's never been true before. It's actually rather remarkable when you think about it. You're going to be my treasure possession, the whole earth is mine, but you're going to be a priestly kingdom. You're going to be a holy nation. That's what you say to the Israelites. And so Moses came, and he summoned the elders of the people, and he set before them all these words that the Lord had commanded him. And the people all answered as one. Everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do. So here we are. Moses comes to us. Moses tells us that if we do these things, we're going to be this special thing, and we're going to be like a priestly kingdom and a holy nation, and those things are going to be combined. And our response is what? Right here. Everything. Say it. Everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do. Oh, let's try it like we actually believe it. Everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do. Got ya. Let's see what God says, shall we? That's what we're going to do in the spring. We'll see by the time we get to May whether you actually believe this or not. No more shrimp. No, I'm joking. No, there's ways of dealing with that. But anyway, everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do. Because again, for me at least, right? What they're in a sense saying, they know what it's like to serve Pharaoh. They know what it's like to be in Egypt. They know what that's like. So as long as it's not that, it seems to me that everything the Lord has spoken, we will do, is in fact Israel's what God has said about the eagle's wings thing is about how I love you and I brought you to myself. And their response is, we love you too and thank you. Whatever we can do. It's actually rather sweet. So Moses reported the words of the people to the Lord. And then the Lord said to Moses, I'm going to come to you in a dense cloud in order that the people may hear when I speak with you and so trust you ever after. When Moses had told the people, words of the people to the Lord said to Moses, go down to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. That is, to consecrate means to make holy. And again, we've seen something about holiness before, holy nation, right? Priestly kingdom, holy nation. And what holiness means, and this is kind of important, to consecrate something or to make something holy. And again, we're good Episcopalians. We know about this. In fact, it'll be rather clear in just a second that we know more about this than we actually realize. All holiness means is something that is set apart for the worship of God. Something that is set apart for the worship of God. And these things that are set apart for the worship of God can be things, they can be places, they can be people, they can be clothes, they can be all sorts of things. But all it means is something that's set apart for the worship of God. And so you're actually treated differently because it's that type of set apart. Not here. When I and my wife were in New Haven before we moved here in 99, we went to a church in New Haven, Connecticut called Christ Church. Which is one of the first Anglo-Catholic parishes actually in the United States. And they had a movable altar. It was an altar that was against the east wall, for those of you who are lifelong Episcopalians. They had an altar against the east wall, but they also had a movable altar that they would move around to write two things. But there wasn't really a place to keep it, because when the church was built, there wasn't a place to store movable altars, because why would you move an altar? It's kind of crazy. And so what they had to do is that I had to put it in the corner by the back door. And what people would do is that they would come in the door on a day like today, take off their coats and their hats, and they'd throw it on the table, right? Because that's what the table's for, so they would throw it on the table, right? This in Christ Church, priests and... Oh my God, that was horrible. And so what they did, I still remember this, like it was a very, very fine lettering on the sign, but there was a sign that they would put on the altar that says, this is a holy altar of God. Do not put your coats here. Right? Again, we're good at failing, so we actually understand, I think, we kind of understand this, and that is because it's an altar, it's not a table. Right? This is just a lectern, right? So you treat it differently. It's not that there's something in the wood or something that transmogrifies and makes it other, right? No, but because it's set apart for the worship of God, you treat it differently. Sound good so far? And there are various ways that we'll talk about in the spring that this process happens. Holy things doesn't mean that they're really good. It doesn't mean they're really moral. It doesn't mean they're nice all the time. It doesn't mean that the vestments never need to be cleaned. It doesn't mean any of those things. It simply means things that are set apart for the worship of God. So far, so good. And this is what's going to be happening with the people, because they're going to be a holy nation, and so part of that is going to be setting them apart. When Moses told the word, blah, 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 go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. And part of that process is, and again, being good Episcopalians, we sort of understand liturgy, and so have them wash their clothes and prepare for the third day, because on the third day, the Lord is going to come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. And you shall set limits for the people all around, saying, be careful not to go up to the mountain or touch the edge of it. Any who touch the mountain should be put to death. And again, I know this is harsh, but there's reasons for it. Shall be put to death. No hand shall touch them. Right? If somebody goes up and somehow touches the mountain, then you can't touch them. Touching is really important with rituals. I don't know if you've noticed this. Touching is really important. Things that touch, right? Jesus does this a lot, touching people. So if you touch the mountain, you're not supposed to touch the mountain. So if you touch the mountain, then nobody can touch you, because Sinai is now holy, and you touch it, you become holy. And you're not holy. Not yet, at least. And so it causes a problem with this type of touching. No hand shall touch them, they shall be stoned or shot with arrows. You see, they have to be killed. But you can't kill them by strangling them. You can't kill them by... You can only kill them by something that doesn't touch them. Touching is going to be, again, touching is going to be really important. Whether animal or human being, they shouldn't live. And then, when there's a trumpet that sounds a long blast, then they can go up on the mountain. You see, there's a boundary that sometimes you can't cross the boundary. Again, these are things that there's a logic to ritual. There's a logic to holiness that, in fact, you know better than you think you know. There are certain times in which you can't cross the boundary. And then something will happen, like a sound, and then suddenly you can cross the boundary. So far, so good. What I noticed this morning, absolutely remarkable. I and my wife, when she shows up, when she's not here, I sit in the nave. But when she's here, because she likes to sit in the transept, I sit in the transept, so I get a nice up-close view. What's interesting is that what happens during the service over there is this. I mean, just last week we killed somebody for... No. But the thing that happens in there is exactly a representation of this. There's a sound that's made. We close the boundary. Remember the little acolyte that comes out and closes the boundary? And suddenly, after that happens, nobody that's inside the chancel comes outside the chancel. Nobody that's outside the chancel goes inside the chancel. It's important, right? And then a certain sound happens, and then the gates are open, and then we can come in and out. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's actually built up on steps. And it's built up on steps, it seems to me, not just so that we can see, but it actually, in a weird sort of way, it's actually a representation of Sinai. There's fire up there. There's sounds that are going on up there, not just human voices. Dong, 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 right? There's sounds that go on up there. It's kind of... Sometimes there's smoke. Exactly. My Anglo-Catholicism is first doing that. Exactly. Yeah, and so again, for me at least, it's in a funny sort of way, when you read it, it's kind of strange. But I think that we actually understand this better than we think we do. So Moses went down the mountain to the people. He consecrated the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said the people prepare for the third day, and also... Incidentally, don't go near a woman. And the reason why is because we have boundaries. And you don't want to cross those boundaries. We have boundaries. Don't make me use hand motions. And you don't want to cross boundaries when there's boundaries are important. It's not just sex is bad. No, sex is actually really good. But there are certain boundaries that during certain rituals you don't want to cross. If you don't understand what I'm talking about, see me afterwards. Cool. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder, there was lightning, as well as a thick cloud on the mountain, a blast of a trumpet so loud that all the people who were in the camp trembled. Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God. Hello, how are you? Very, very well, how are you? So they meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended upon it in a fire. The smoke went up like the smoke of a kiln, while the whole mountain shook violently. As the blast of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses would speak, and God would answer him in thunder. And the people can hear this. I mean, we're standing there at the foot of the mountain with this boundary. Can't go up there yet. But we're standing there, and we're looking up the mountain, and there's... all heaven breaking loose, right, on the top of the mountain. And we can actually hear. We can actually hear God's voice. And this is going to be important when we start in January. We can actually hear God's voice, and we can actually hear God speaking with Moses, and we can hear Moses speaking with God. And what that's going to do for us, as God has said here, what that's going to do for us is that whenever Moses comes down and he starts saying, this is what God has said, we actually believe him. We don't distrust him, because we actually have evidence that he's actually quite literally interfacing with God up there. Moses would speak, and God would answer him in thunder. When the Lord descended upon Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, the Lord summoned Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up, and the Lord said to Moses, go down.
Oh my God, I just got here.
I don't know. I haven't gone through and counted how many times he actually goes up and goes down the mountain, but something like 5 times. The Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people not to break through to the Lord to look, right? Otherwise, many of them will perish. Even the priests who approach the Lord have to consecrate themselves, or the Lord is going to break out against them. And this is something else that we sort of talked about, this breaking out. It's kind of like measles or something. And it is a really good word, and that is breaking out is a great sort of metaphor for holiness. Because holiness depends on certain boundaries. And certain types of boundaries that can't get crossed at certain times and can get crossed at certain times. And therefore, when that boundary gets crossed, it becomes dangerous. Because what happens when that boundary gets crossed in an inappropriate way? Well, bad things happen. And we know this is true in our own lives about boundaries. This is something that some priests don't have good boundaries. You know what I'm talking about, right? Again, even in our own psychological talk, we talk about issues of holiness, right? Ways in which we have boundaries or break boundaries, have good boundaries or don't have good boundaries with people. It seems to me that all of this is it's so ingrained in us that we don't realize it. And that's a good thing. I think we naturally understand these types of things. Moses said to the Lord, he says, you know, go and make sure that they don't touch the mountain. And Moses said to the Lord, you know what? The people aren't permitted to come up on Mount Sinai because you yourself warned us, saying, set limits around the mountain to keep it holy. And in fact, that's what they're doing. For me, at least, that's a nice little conversation point right there. God says, set boundaries around it. You can't do this. Have them wash their blah, blah. Third day, I'm going to come down. Don't go near a woman. Blah, 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 blah. Moses comes up and God says, warn the people not to touch the mountain. And Moses says, I already have. You've already warned us about that. And they're actually doing it. There's not a story that's put in here about some guy that comes up and decides to touch the mountain and gets stoned. They're actually respecting the boundaries. They're actually doing what you've asked. Which might give some indication about the next 3 books. That in fact, maybe these things aren't just set up in the words of Paul in Galatians in 2 verses. Maybe these things aren't set up to make us feel bad about ourselves because we can't live up to God's expectations. No. In fact, God's expectations are actually rather simple. And maybe these things are set up simply as a natural reflex about what this relationship entails. What it means to live with integrity. What it means to live with love. But boundaries are important. So. Moses said, Lord, the people aren't permitted to come up on Mount Sinai. You yourself warned us, saying, set limits around the mountain to keep it holy. And the Lord said to him, go down. And notice here the boundary gets moved a little bit, which is good. Right? Go down and bringing Aaron with you. Aaron is the priest, right, the head of the priests. Go down and come up bringing Aaron with you. But don't let either the priest or the people break through to come up to the Lord. Otherwise, he's going to break out against them. And so Moses went down to the people and told them all these things. And you can tell that this kind of ends. Remember last week we talked about resolution and denouement? Remember last week? Yeah. There's no resolution. And the reason why is because I want you to come back in the spring. but what happens immediately after this? It's Exodus 20. Say Exodus 20.
Exodus 20.
What happens immediately after this, obviously this is 19, the next chapter is Exodus 20, and what happens in Exodus 20 is this. Then God spoke all of these words saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the house of bondage, out of the house of Egypt, right? You shall have no other gods besides me. You should not make for yourself a graven image of anything that's in the heaven or on the earth or under the earth. You should not use my name wrongly. Honor your father and your mother so that your days may be long on the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie on a witness stand. And whatever you do, don't obsess about other people's things. Covet. Again, it's sort of a build-up and it's sort of a drop-off because, in fact, what we're going to talk about the very first time we meet in the spring are the 10 words, what I always call the Big Ten. They're always called the, well, like the movie says, the Ten
Commandments.
Yeah, they're always called the Ten Commandments. The Bible never says that they're commandments. The Bible never claims. The word commandment is used a lot in the next three books of the Bible, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. It's used a lot in those, but it's never referred to those ten. And the reason why is because I don't think that they are commandments. They're just basic principles about what this relationship entails. It's not like you have to put it in your Outlook planner. Oh, can't commit adultery today. Right? You don't. It's not like little themes. No, those 10 words are kind of like words themselves, and that is, they're woven together in such a way that it's a picture of a life. It's a picture of our life, both corporately as well as individually. And that picture is what it is, a picture of what it means to be in relationship with God. And so, ta-da! That's sort of how I'm going to end it. So there it is. Any questions, concerns, comments, prayer requests, or donations? Cool. I know I kind of went long today. Okay. Cool. Please come back in the spring. I know we're going to be talking about law. I'll try to make it interesting. I won't make it interesting. I will show you how it's interesting. So, sound good? Thank you very much.